Hello and welcome to The Industry is Doom. I am your host, Crash and Burn. And yeah, it's been a while since I recorded this show. An entire pandemic occurred. But, you know, things get in the way, like global crises. And I'm just happy to be back here producing some stuff. And I'm with my great friend, my best friend, the best friend of the show, Katie Jean. Say hello.
Hello, how are you, my best friend?
I am good. I am loaded because, of course, we are here taking in intoxications, the partaking of the great bacchanalia and such. That is our typical once every 3 month.
Yeah, we get to hang out once every 3 months, and we tried to fit an entire 3 months into one hangout where we get brutally drunk and then brutally hungover in the morning. It's a good cyclical process.
Yeah, yeah.
And a great friendship.
It truly works out for all involved. But one thing that occurred since that friendship was incepted, right around the same time as the world more or less ended.
Yeah, you're my pandemic friend.
Hooray! I kind of like that because it's like when the world ended, I at least figured that you weren't an asshole.
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Right?
That's...
2 years ago, where were you? Like, just give me a rough, quick, you know, we'll go into it later, but a brief outline of where you were 2 years ago.
Well, 2 years ago, it was the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, and like any other Canadian or Nova Scotian or global citizen, I was panicking over this new virus, the novel coronavirus, and I started watching a lot of briefings, both the Justin Trudeau briefing and the provincial briefings, and I live tweeted it. I put it on my Twitter because it was nice to see that other people were panicking. And I also put it out there to show other people that other people were panicking. And it was just kind of a way to have community when the entire world was shut down and we couldn't actually talk to anyone or see anyone. So that's where I was at 2 years ago right now.
Yeah, just like reaching out to people because everyone, of course, was scared. Everyone was confused. And
yeah,
just using social media, you weren't trying to do some sort of media campaign blitz.
No.
Just honest content.
My plans were, because before the pandemic I was a church organist and I was practicing Easter hymns because I thought my job would continue, and obviously Easter never happened and I didn't return. So
and 2 years later, where are you now?
I think I'm a journalist. it's kind of funny because like my Twitter got pretty popular over the pandemic, and people used to like started calling me the media, and I'd be like, no, I'm not the media. I'm just on Twitter. And now people are like, oh my God, you're the media. And I'm like, no. Yeah, I am the media. Holy shit. I don't really know how it happened, but yeah, now I am a columnist and I'm a writer.
Yeah, so you're working for Saltwire, and you ended up there, and again, like, it is directly because of the tweeting you did.
Yes.
I just want to say that's really fucking incredible to start
Thank
with.
Thank you.
It's almost like wonderfully ridiculous in this incredible way of like, Isn't social media potentially fantastic?
Of the dumpster fire, it is. Like, I'm at least one good thing. Like, I might be the only good thing that came out of social media. It's entirely from Twitter and all the bad shit that I see in the days and all the bad things that have been even said to me. I got a job out of it, so I'm pretty happy with that.
So going back to pre-pandemic times, you were somewhat in the media, correct?
Somewhat. Not a whole lot. Like, probably my first launch into, I guess, being known on social media is I used to run a Twitter account called Dartmouth Haiku. and I would write haiku about Dartmouth, and it was usually like, you know, look at that drunk guy down by Sullivan's Pond, he's staggering bad, or something like that. Like, I don't even know if that was a haiku, or it was, because I can think of haikus really quickly now. And then two geese, or three geese possibly, in Dartmouth were killed by a driver.
I believe it was two, yeah.
Yeah. I think like a third was injured.
Yeah. If the third geese had died, the driver would have had to be executed in public, I'm pretty sure.
I'm surprised he wasn't, honestly.
I think that's Dartmouth law.
But yeah, I held a memorial for the geese. And that kind of got me noticed. People actually showed up to it, which was shocking.
I remember, yeah, like people were talking about that. It was an actual event.
Oh yeah, no, I had somebody come and play live music, and like I just put this whole thing together and I spoke about it and like what the Dartmouth geese meant to Dartmouth. And it was also the first time I got a social media death threat. So it really, like, it was kind of my first like launch into social media popularity in some sense.
Hold on. You got a death threat.
Okay, put an S on the end. Death threats.
What?
About, yeah, I know. It was insane.
I was having enough trouble like trying to comprehend one person being upset enough over you having a vigil for multiple dead geese who are beloved in the town that you live in, Dartmouth.
The little bastards.
Multiples?
Loved. Yeah.
Are they from the same person?
No. I had like three go to Dartmouth Haiku saying like, I should be hit by a car. And like, they think that like one said, I should try my chances in the crosswalk. And I was like, this is the most stupid thing. Like, this is kind of good that this is how my Twitter, I guess, career started, because it just showed how absolutely ridiculous social media can be and is. And yeah. So I got death threats from the Goose Memorial, and then I saved a bee just before then on the Weather Network. So I did have like some following, but it wasn't like immense. Like I get recognized at the grocery store now, and it wasn't like that before.
A bit of a change, yeah, for sure. Now, from there, you also have done some acting. Like, you know, you've appeared on social media, but in some markets where, like, we can't even watch some of the stuff legally that you have been in.
Okay, can I just, like, establish right now that I don't do porn?
It's not porn. It's not porn. It's not porn. It's not porn.
It's not porn. It's not porn.
It's IP locked by jurisdiction. It's not porn.
Yeah. If I had that money, I wouldn't be on Twitter anymore. yeah, I've done some acting. So I used to do some film, regular, you know, PG-14 film. This is just going to keep thinking about porn. I used to work in the film industry in Nova Scotia for regular film things that people watch. And that was in my early 20s. And I just, there's a point where, like, film hours are really long, and I just wasn't sure if I wanted to make like a career out of that. Like, do I really want to work for 3 months straight, 14 hours a day, and then not know where my next job is coming from?
Yeah.
So I left the film industry, and then I saw a Stephen King film was coming to Nova Scotia, and I said, hey, I want to be immortalized in a Stephen King film in whatever aspect, like, as, you know, background or whatever I could do. So I applied for it, and I got it as background. I was lucky because it took literally no skill. It was off of like your waist size. So you needed to have a waist size underneath like 27 inches, and you needed to look gaunt, which like I do. Like, I fit the part. Anyway, it was to be a vampire, and I guess I fucking look like one. So I got hired. And I ended up being bumped up to cast in the Stephen King film. So I went from like just wanting to be in a split second of a Stephen King related, it's a series, not a film. And I ended up making a lot of money and also getting into the actors' unions.
Which, yeah, like, will eventually lead to more money.
Yeah.
But with, you know, acting and whatever. Just to name check it, what is that show and where is it available?
Yeah, so I'm cast in Chapelweight. I'm in the last 4 episodes of Chapelweight. I think CTV still has it available. In the United States, it was Epix. And I think it may be available, I want to say Amazon, but I don't think. But definitely CTV and Epix.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice. And then last summer, I did a series that was also Epix called From. But I'm only in that for 0.00002 seconds. And you probably won't recognize me anyway, because apparently people look at me and say, hey, she's kind of creepy looking. Let's pay her money to do it on a film.
I mean, you know, if you consider the rate that you got paid for that 0.00002 seconds.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah,
that should be your regular.
I know. Yeah, and both things, I'm the bad guy, and one I'm a vampire, and the other one I'm called what is a creature, and it's basically the exact same character twice.
Delightful.
I do it really well. I do creepy really good.
People have always said when it comes to acting, if you have a villainous look, you actually have it made.
Yeah.
You work for life.
Well, like with Chapelweight, since I was a vampire in that, the main vampire is Chris Heyerdahl, who's like a vampire in literally everything he does.
Hi, I'm a professional vampire.
Yeah, because he's like 6'6". I think he's Canadian, but I think he's like of Swedish descent. I could be totally wrong about that. And if somebody's listening, I know I'm probably wrong about that. You don't have to like talk about it. But yeah,
argue in the comments.
Yeah, he has like a whole career off of being a vampire, and I'm sure he's quite comfortable in his living situation.
Right? Like, I kind of want a life like that. I understand how actors used to worry about being stereotyped, but like, imagine how amazing it would be to be Bela Lugosi and just be like, no, I get to be creepy my entire life, and no one's going to find it like weird or off-putting. They're going to give me money to be creepy. Yeah, well,
and that's the good thing about being creepy is because you really don't have to work on your acting skills. You just show up and look cool, and people give you money for it. Like, it took me zero skill. The makeup artist did all the work, and I just, like, stood there. They're like, fucking awesome. Here's $2,000 a day. And I was like, thumbs up. Let's go.
You're sitting there getting rained on. You're just like, I am miserable. And they're like, it's perfect.
I love it. Yeah. Yeah, well, actually, in Chapelweight, like, my first scene that you see me in, I'm in a puddle. And so the thing is with Chapelweight, it's a period film with I keep saying film, it's a series. It's a period piece with Adrian Brody. And in most of it, like, the non-vampire people are wearing, like, petticoats and stuff. And they actually filmed that in the summer. So they had a bunch of actors that were super uncomfortable because they're wearing, like, 5 layers.
Delightful.
But when they come to the vampire part where I'm wearing next to nothing, I am wearing clothes. This is not...
Not
that
a porn.
Kind of show.
Not a porn.
Not a porn.
Not even a Skinamax.
But anyway, so they put me in like very thin clothing in a puddle in December in Nova Scotia. And again, I got this part because I'm very skinny. I was then. I've gained the COVID-19. But I was very skinny. So they put the skinniest person they could find in Dartmouth inside a puddle in December. And I was so cold, I pulled my back because from shivering.
Oh my God.
I was so noticeably cold that Adrian Brody himself approached me and said, oh my God, I have to get you out of here. And literally made production change their camera shot so I wouldn't be in any more scenes. He like demanded I get out of the puddle. They're like, get her warm and get her towels like immediately. That's how cold I was. I've never been that cold in my life. I was freezing.
Swept off your feet by the hero Adrian Brody.
But I
carried you out as the theme song from The Bodyguard plays in the background. And and everyone just starts slow clapping.
And then I was like, I was walking off the set, and he was like kind of walking past me, and I said, I really want to hug you. And he like kind of looked like he was going to accept it, but I was like, but COVID. And I just like, mic drop, walk away from Adrian Brody.
Oh, that's power.
Yeah.
That's power.
Yeah, that was power.
He probably thinks about that every
time. It's actually because I'm really awkward, but like it seems like I was being really cool.
Adrian Brody thinks that you're just like stone cold.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He was like, I saved her for nothing.
He's going to be like sitting on a yacht somewhere in the Mediterranean, you know, just constantly thinking like, yeah, but.
That one girl got away. I'm Adrian Brody's one that got away.
So you've acted, you've social media'd. All of that's like really awesome and amazing, but it's not necessarily, you know, journalism. It's not getting into journalism.
Right.
However, you still find yourself now in a position where not only do you have a weekly column and write for a couple of other sources, as I understand, just yesterday you had lunch with the former premier and you last week received a gift that included an autograph from Dr. Strang, and you've been in contact with so many politicians, and Justin Trudeau's office knows who you are.
Yeah.
How'd you go from 0 to 60? How? See,
this is where I think I lucked out. And I think this is where it happened. So when I started doing the live tweeting of the briefings on, I believe it was April 6th of 2020. This is when Trudeau was doing his like daily briefings outside of his house. Mm-hmm. And at the beginning of the pandemic, I live tweeted more concentrated on federal than provincial. And anyway, one day, in like the most stressful moment, Justin Trudeau ran his fingers through his hair. And I took a gif of it. And I just said, like, in case you needed this today, here's Justin Trudeau touching his hair. Because he looked amazing.
And he did. I believe that GIF is now widely available. And yeah, it's kind of weird to see a GIF your friend made. It's just like, every now and then, because I used to hang out on Rooster Teeth forums, I'll see a GIF of someone that like, no, I know that person. I have gotten drunk with that person. And that's one thing. But to see one used that's like, I know who made that. I know why they made that. Yeah. I remember when they made that. That's screwy.
But so like, I know my own stuff pops up in my life sometimes. I'm like, what? Why does this look familiar? I was like, oh, I wrote that. So with the hair touch gif, eventually he kept doing this because his hair was getting longer and he was holding these outdoor briefings. And I'm not saying I was the first to notice his hair, but like I was pretty close to the beginning. And like Trudeau's hair started to become like a thing. Like it was like a Canadian phenomenon because he wouldn't go get his hair cut because he was standing next to like COVID restrictions, and everybody started talking about the Prime Minister's hair. So our local Chronicle Herald that I now technically work for wrote an article about Justin Trudeau's hair.
Mm.
And they didn't ask me about it. And Twitter kind of wasn't happy with this snub because I had become like a Justin Trudeau hair expert. But what they didn't know was a week later, or not even a week later, I was in the New York Times talking about Justin Trudeau's hair. So I got an interview with the New York Times talking about the Prime Minister and like the insanity that was. So I get the New York Times over like a local news source, which was a huge deal. And of course, everyone erupted because I was like, oh yeah, I got snubbed, but I got into the New York Times for it. And then about the same week that came out, Jim Richards, he used to have a talk show in Toronto. He was like the first person to really know George Strombolopoulos.
Hmm.
He's kind of industry known. He had me on his radio show to talk about it. And it was an hour long radio show. And the entire time he says like, I'm coming up. Like I was the subject of his talk radio.
Yeah.
And he kept calling me a national disgrace. So like I'm on the hold line. And this man is tearing me to pieces. And at first I'm like mortified. I'm thinking, fuck me. I walked directly into this because I had asked him before. I was like, are you like a conservative? Like, am I walking into something? And he said, no, I'm not walking into anything. And then immediately he calls me a national disgrace. I'm like, fuck, what am I going to do? On the flip side, about halfway through this hour of him shredding me, I'm like, wait, this guy's just giving me time to think about how I'm going to respond to this. Like, rather than being upset, I'm just going to rip him up. So I get on and he's talking to me and I'm like a huge asshole to him, like obviously on purpose, like with humor. And that kind of got like an Ontario following for myself, because at the end I told him like he was my mortal enemy. I never wanted to see him again. Like, and then we ended up being Twitter friends. But yeah, so that was kind of like the first bump and how people started kind of noticing me.
I like how you feuded. You had a minor feud with someone else who put you over. It's also pro wrestling.
Yeah, I know. I couldn't believe it. I was so terrified because like I told my mom and my brother, and so they were tuned in. They heard him like calling me a national disgrace.
I got to hear my daughter be called a national disgrace. Bring a tear to your eye.
Little did I know that would be one of the more milder things I'd be called in the next 2 years. But yeah, so that's kind of where it got started, that people started noticing my tweets. Now, what happened between, I think that was like May or June 2020 and today? Don't really know. It started getting more popular around, I would say, like, I did a one-year review of the Nova Scotia provincial briefings and Justin Trudeau's briefings, and that's when Saltwire first noticed me. Saltwire, they still kind of have this thing, I can't remember what it's called right now, but they were going to have almost like an attempt at their version of the coast.
Okay.
And they tried to launch it around the pandemic, and it just...
Oh, that's just bad.
Yeah, topic. I think there is, like, I think the Twitter account still exists and people do work there, but I don't know much about it now. But they covered it, and then Main Street CBC covered it. And I think that's when people started noticing, like, I could write long form, because tweets are 280 characters, inclusive of periods, apostrophes, everything. But that was, like, the first time I kind of long formed something. And that's about the time... Yeah, I think that's when the potential journalism career started.
It's kind of really funny because you immediately broke through with the New York Times, and then you ended up with the regional media monopoly. I say that in glowing terms. Yay.
Yes, Saltwire is the best.
They're the best.
Love them.
It's great. Meanwhile, I had to get debt. Tens of thousands of dollars of debt.
I feel like such an asshole. Like, I can't explain what happened. Like, I don't, like, people pay me. A company pays me. Two companies pay me to write for them. And I have no idea how that happened. And I wish I did. But I honestly, like, I love it. And I love writing. But I don't know. I don't know.
It just happened.
Yeah, so it kind of just kept going from there. One or two things would happen, like, you know, more waves of COVID, federal election, provincial election, rumblings of elections, elections maybe happening. Like, that kind of upped my Twitter account a little bit.
Well, yeah, I remember at some point last year before the election, it was COVID's trending off, everything will be fine. And you said that, okay, I'm not going to do anything. We're just going to like pack this away. It was fun, but you know, unless something silly like an election happens.
Yeah.
We're done with this. Yeah. And then, yeah, an election happened and then another election happened and COVID came back and then.
Fuck me. I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause like I'm really personally interested in climate change and climate action. So I kind of had this plan, like you said, around July. I was like, okay, once COVID calms down, I'm going to try to like change the vibe of my account a little bit more to climate change, because apparently people like when I freak out when the world's burning down, and what better to apply that to than the world literally burning down? So I guess I really get that message across to people. So it's like, okay, COVID's going to calm down. I'm going to just talk about like provincial politics and climate change. And that's the direction I'm going to start taking my Twitter account in. And then COVID just happened again, and a provincial election happened and a federal election happened, and I didn't know what was going on anymore. And then COVID hit again, and I haven't been able to actually like switch my gears that much. I would like to, but I don't think it would be a good service to be like, hey, guess what? We're all going to die, either from a virus or the world burning down. Good luck, everyone. Have a great day. I do try to keep people somewhat happy and not scare them.
Thank you. Well, you know, everyone needs a hobby, I guess. And it, I guess it's a nice thing that at the end of the day, people would rather hear about doom and gloom from you than either not hear about it or panic outright. That's good. You have the assurance of a pilot as a plane is crashing.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, but it's actually funny. You can see this evidence of me attempting to go into climate change because just about, it was like mid-December, I had a column come out where I interviewed Jerry Butts about climate change. And that was going to be my like step off into climate. And that's actually the week that Omicron happened. Ah. So that is the evidence that I was just like, I'm not doing COVID anymore. And I was like, guess what? We're doing COVID again. And then booster shots started happening. And then like children started getting vaccinated. And it was like, I want it to end. And not that I don't, like, I like covering COVID. Like, I know a lot about it. I might as well use this knowledge. And people seem to like to go to me as a source of COVID knowledge, and I really do appreciate that, and I would never stop completely. But yeah, I've been trying to like just hope that like even for a month so I can start not talking about it.
It'd be nice to breathe.
Yeah, it'd be nice to like, well, literally it'd be nice to breathe like in a public setting without fearing that I have just breathed in death. I would like to not play Russian roulette with my nostrils. But yeah, so that was the original plan, and now I don't know what I'm doing. I have no idea what I'm doing at all. Like, in any aspect of my life, I have no idea what I'm doing now. I guess I'm still covering COVID, and I have a column that somebody pays me money for. I don't know what's going on.
Considering that, I won't ask you, like, where you think the future is going, because A, we just clearly explained that your ideas and presumptions about the future don't mean shit.
Yeah, they can sometimes end. Don't
congratulations.
Ask you.
Now you have a journalism career.
Yeah, I know.
But what's a project you'd love to work on?
That is a good question. I mean, personally, I know I just talked about like getting away from COVID. I did the 2-year review of Nova Scotia provincial briefs, the COVID-19 briefings. I'd like to make that into an entire book, cut down on my course language a little bit, and expand into actual like global events that were happening at the same time to really put it in perspective. But any other projects? I don't know. I've been thinking of starting a YouTube series. It's just, it's so weird because I don't understand how I got here. And I just, every day I wake up and something cool happens. And I'm not scared for the day that it might drop, but I just expect, like, I guess my luck to almost run out. So I try not to look too much into the future in case, you know, my luck does run out. And maybe, you know, Saltwire has, like, some movings around as they do, and I could be out of a job. This whole like, this could have just been a ride. So I try not to think too far into the future or think too big, because I just feel so lucky with what I have.
Well, damn, just conclude the episode, why don't you?
And it's over. No, it's not. It's like COVID.
We're back for five more episodes.
Hold on.
No, that was fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on The Industry is Doom. If anyone is interested in seeing your incredible amount of stuff that you've generated over the last 2 years, where can they find it?
Everything splinters off of my Twitter account, so the best thing to do is to follow me on Twitter. My handle is Katie, not I-E. That's at K-A-T-Y, not I-E. Not Katie Naughty. This is, or Katie No Tie. It is K-A-T-Y, not I-E on Twitter.
I was kind of wanted to know that, and I always forget it because we usually get drunk around each other and stuff.
Yeah, it's how you spell my name. And
damn it, that's where I fucked up every time.
I know. It's K-A-T-Y, not I-E. But I've gotten mail to my house addressed to Katie Naughty, and I still get it. I've met people, and they've called me Naughty. I've had to correct television interviews that have put my name as Katie Naughty. I'm like, no, my name's Katie Jean. And they're like, well, who's Naughty? Is that like your maiden name? And I'm like, K-A-T-Y, not I-E. Do you know how much effort I put into correcting this? I was on the CBC provincial election during the election, obviously. And I literally introduced myself. I said, hi, my name is Katie Jean. You may know me from Twitter at K-A-T-Y, not I-E. I went on Nova Scotia CBC and broadcast to the entire province my Twitter handle. And yet today, people are still like, oh my God, what? And I'm like, and because I always talk about the Prime Minister's tie, some people think it's Katie No Tie. And I'm like, what a mess. If you want to know how much I did not expect my Twitter account to be a success for myself at all, I would have made a way better handle than the one I have right now.
You know you can change it, right?
Yeah, but now so many people follow me and I have so many... I have changed it before, but I have my handle on so many websites that I can't change, that I don't want to change it now. And then it's a thing now, and it's the cross I have to bear for not thinking forwardly about my Twitter handle. I'm an idiot.
Because, yeah, no one's ever changed Twitter handles before.
Oh no, not this one. Not at all. I tried to tag my best friend in post, and I can't find her anywhere, and I have to text her and be like, what's your Twitter handle today?
Listen, if you can keep them jumping, keep them on their toes.
Okay, but, like, can you inform your friends of any and all name changes?
I'll keep you informed when the paperwork comes in.
Okay, you're right. She's gonna name herself like fucking Felicia or something, and I'm never gonna find her again.
Just Felicia, just at Felicia.
At Felicia.
She'll never look.
No.
Thank you so much for listening to The Industry is Doom. Doom! I have been your host, Crash and Burn. Please like, share, and subscribe. Check out some more of my content at patreon.com/hereyego, where you will find over 100 podcast episodes, videos, essays, and some more crazy shit. Until next time, after another world-ending pandemic, goodbye!
Goodbye!